Atheist Nomads, episode 254, Salvation Army and Bullshit Peddled at Moms.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin. Joining me is Lauren.
Hello.
We have.
Sorry, I was distracted. I'm like, I have two dogs near me and a baby. I'm like, okay, who is emanating that smell?
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised we haven't gotten the usual words from producer Rocco.
Yeah,
but he's
being
quiet.
A good boy.
And the intern appears to be just playing with her toys.
Yep.
So we're good there. And we have Mary with us.
Hello.
Who came? Sans baby.
Sans baby. She's noisy these days, so.
Starting to battle.
Many places, yeah.
The nice She's thing chatting. with when you're coming onto a podcast where the hosts have a baby is... The listeners are already getting used to that.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll get into all the mommy stuff, but let's jump into dusting off the degree. You've all seen the Salvation Army thrift stores and the bell ringers, especially around Christmas time when they're raising money, ringing their bells. And while there is a Salvation Army charitable organization, it is run by the Salvation Army Church. The organization was founded under the name of the East London Christian Mission by a Methodist Reformed Church minister, William Booth, and his wife, Catherine, in 1865. Their early goal was to convert the poor prostitutes, alcoholics, and gamblers of London, with William leading the preaching and Catherine working her way through high society, raising money to support their mission work. In 1878...
Poor Catherine. That sounds so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. In 1878, in a letter where William had dictated, "We are a volunteer army," to his secretary, his secretary responded, "I'm not a volunteer. I'm a regular." And they had some back and forth and changed it to, "We are a Salvation Army." By the end of the year, William styled himself a general. They had renamed the organization to the Salvation Army. He started wearing a military-style uniform. He started commissioning other ministers as officers and made the lay members soldiers. And Catherine got the title of Mother of the Salvation Army.
I just get the feeling that they were really drunk during this entire ordeal. Like, they're out there to save the drunks, but really they were drinking and they're like, "I'm not a volunteer. Let's call it the Salvation Army. Oh my god, that is such a great idea. We can just run with it. You'll be the general." And oh my god, and
let's
it
start
just
a
got
band
away.
No, no, oh, let's start an army instead.
Let's
like that,
no,
that
let's do a military band. And then everything just, oh god,
yeah,
got out of hand real fast.
Well, and it's so weird that everything they set up is all based on that little bit of banter. The entire structure they chose.
Right. It doesn't make sense unless you're drunk and you think that was a really good idea. And it's just,
well,
or
let's
I.
See. 1860s, opium, mind enhancing drugs.
Like, all they need is the word dude in front of it. And that's.
This was Britain, so maybe some ganja was coming up from India. You know. They set their evangelism style with three S's. First, soup. Second, soap. And third, salvation.
Oh, I like that salvation as third.
So you feed people, you clean them up, and then you save them. That's definitely sounds like a better approach than you must listen to the preaching and accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior before you get a bowl of soup and a shower.
But is that ultimately the order that ends up being important to them? Because I have heard a lot of stories about them kicking out transgender people, gay people, people that aren't falling in line. So is it really?
It's probably,
and you can say that, but if it's not what you're,
it sounds good.
Yeah,
right?
It sounds good,
but,
right? But
in practice,
is that really how it's?
Well, if you are the right kind of outcast from society, then soup, soap, and salvation works, and that order works.
Homeless white male.
If you're a homeless white drunk.
Homeless white drunk.
But if you're a...
Oh, right, because they went for prostitutes, too.
Yeah. But if you're a homeless white trans drunk, that's a different story.
It's a whole nother level of sin there. That's.
I wanted to say, like, the Mormons are like this a lot too, where they like, they go into poorer communities, like third world countries also, and they start with preaching. And mm-hmm. I'm like, what good? I mean, even if it's right, what good does that do somebody who can't afford to feed themselves? Like,
yeah,
maybe start there.
Well, you have to give them a reason why their life is messed up mm-hmm. and say, this is why. It's because you were born with sin. Well, we have the cure for that. And we have shelter and we have all this good stuff because we're godly people. So then who, you know, the poor degenerates that they're pandering to are like, well, I'd rather have all that. So even if it's, you know, tongue in cheek, they're going to go ahead and go to church so that they have access.
Making poverty an issue of like morality, like a moral failing.
Mm-hmm. When it's a social failing.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
it's, well, yeah, keep.
And I have experience with doing evangelism in the third world.
You were one of the bad guys at one point.
I only made it four sermons in because I was able to see right through what it was. It's convince people they're dirty sinners and they need saved. Convince them that you have the answers and then sell them on those answers.
Yeah, the soup and soap is just swag.
That's just to get people in the door. They were effective enough, though, that by 1900, they'd already had a judge in the U.S. sentence a man who had been in a lot of trouble for drunkenness. He sentenced him to attend the Salvation Army. The Salvation Army didn't yet have a presence in New York, so the church sent people to New York to establish the church there so that this guy could serve out his sentence and get sobered up. And get right with God.
Oh, that's so messed up. But we see that happening nowadays with AA. Mm-hmm. So it's really not much has changed.
Or even in Boise, the Pentecostal drug and alcohol recovery programs that courts will force you to go to.
Yeah. Ugh.
Doesn't make any amount of sense. Like saying you need some sort of counseling or rehab makes sense, but saying you must attend.
Secular counseling would be great.
Yeah.
And I guess they would argue that you're not actually coming to any harm when you are saying that you have to, you know, admit the existence of a higher power. They're not, I don't know, not actually bothering you with anything because it's just words. You don't have to believe it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Nobody's brought it up in court, I guess. So
it has been brought up in court, but unfortunately, when it's court ordered, it's too late. You object to the judge and you go to jail. Because that's your option to not go to jail.
Or you go and do the program, but you're not in stand-in anymore.
In which case, you fail the program and you go to jail.
Aw.
It wouldn't be that hard of a change to make. Offer three options. Like, you have your Pentecostal recovery program, you have your secular recovery program, or this other recovery program. It wouldn't be that hard of a change to implement without like, lawsuit or serious objection.
Yeah.
Like, let's just change it.
So the Salvation Army further boosted their reputation bolstered their reputation in the U.S., providing disaster relief services after the Galveston hurricane in 1900 and the San Francisco earthquake in 1906. They started providing aid to soldiers in the Boer Wars in South Africa, and then they started National Donut Day in 1917, when 250 Salvation Army volunteers fried donuts for American soldiers, often in the soldier's metal hat. That's where that comes from.
I'm speechless.
It's not something created by Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kreme. No, it was the Salvation Army.
I don't even know what to say about that. Like, I love National Donut Day, but...
Which was last week. Yeah.
That's crazy. Like something so beautiful came from something so misguided.
Church volunteers going to the trenches to give soldiers baked and fried sweets.
I'm so like neutral on that. I don't even know what to say. Like, I don't love mm-hmm. the Salvation Army, but I love donuts and like service is great. So I think I just end up somewhere.
Yeah.
Really neutral on that. Like, I want to have a strong opinion, but I don't.
This is kind of, as I was researching this, like, the Salvation Army is as weird as fuck, no matter what way you look at them. But it is so hard to have any strong feelings. But But we'll get more into that as we continue on. World War II, they were one of the founding organizations of the USO. When we think of the USO, most of us think of the performers doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the entertainment that the USO was sending to entertain the troops. The USO was a much larger organization than that, providing, you know, not care packages and helping take care of getting letters back home and all that for soldiers, and also getting entertainment out to soldiers. Now, the reason why we have a view of it, was just the entertainment, is because of soldiers who came back from World War II making movies about it, about the entertainment. As a church, the Salvationists, as the members are known, are not allowed to drink. They can't gamble and they can't do drugs. Marriage is a civil institution, not a religious one, but officers will perform weddings and they are opposed to same-sex marriage. And they only allow members to have sex with opposite-sex marital partners. They have been called a parachurch organization by some churches because they don't baptize members or perform communion. Although, interestingly, they're usually okay with members attending other churches as well where they can get communion.
These people are all over the place.
Uh-huh.
All over the place.
Yeah. Instead of baptism, they put on the uniform, which is styled after the local military uniforms of whatever country they're in, enough so that they were expelled from the Soviet Union, not for being Christian, but for being a paramilitary organization.
Sounds like they're, like, mimicking a church. Like, they're, like, parodying churches. Like, they're like, I don't know, this part's good, this part's good. Like, it'd be funny if we added this into it. Like,
yeah.
There doesn't seem like any real commitment. Like, well, you normally see from organizations like this, they're usually like staunch. They're very like, this is how it is. And these people are like, get married or don't, but, you know, make sure it's to the opposite sex, but also we don't care. And it's just a weird level of commitment to what they're doing.
Now, see, the no, like, baptism and communion, that's for principled reasons. They view baptism as being, and communion both, as being outside signs that hypocrites use to mask their sin. So you don't need that if you're a good Christian who's actually saved.
Yeah, that actually, that makes
some
sense.
They get obvious objections to that from most Christians because baptism and communion are both commanded by Jesus in the Bible.
Yeah, so where do they stand on Jesus? Like,
that he's the Son of God.
He's the Son of God, like, that. He's a
they're actually Trinitarians and always have been, something that, you know, Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Christian Scientists can't claim to be, and something that Adventists haven't always been able to claim. Salvation Army, they've always been Trinitarian. They've generally been among the highest rated and most respected charities, and they're usually among the first non-governmental organizations who respond to a disaster. Since their start, they have allowed women to be ministers, or officers as they call them, and at several times, including in the early 20th century, women have served as the general of the Salvation Army. Until recently, officers were only allowed to marry other officers, and that couple holds the same rank, with the exception of the general spouse, who is a commissioner, not a general. And I use the word spouse because if the general is a woman, her husband is a commissioner, and if the general is a man, his wife is a commissioner.
How progressive.
I was having this. How progressive. Like, I don't know. I seriously don't know what to do with this, with this church and all of their.
Yeah.
Right?
I want to be like, all good for you, but also stop kicking transgender people out.
Now, the reason they had to.
I don't know
to,
what to do.
The reason they had to drop the requirement for officers to marry officers. Is because about...
You would have to have 50-50 men and women.
Right. Yeah. And now it's about 60% of their officers are women. They have more of their clergy is women than men. There is no other church that can say that.
Well, that women go to church more, so that's how it should be.
Oh, it makes sense.
Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons that Mormons claim polygamy is of God is because women are more righteous, so there'll be more of us in the afterlife. So of course, like, we'll need a husband.
Oh,
we'll all
God.
Need husbands, and you know, we're just naturally more righteous people. So
I'm righteous in the 80s vocab sense.
The Salvation Army is proof of that. Like, women yeah. are more righteous.
Yeah. Now, okay, as Mary has pointed out throughout this, they have been staunch opponents of gay rights. It didn't really come up as much of an issue until around 2000, well, mid-90s. All laxing of prohibitions on homosexuality or prohibitions on anything that could be viewed as promoting homosexuality in Britain, they have strongly opposed. And all advancing of gay rights in the U.S., they have strongly opposed. However, they get billions of dollars of taxpayer money. And as soon as those contracts from the government get threatened by them not wanting to grant equal rights to LGBT employees, they back the fuck down.
Yeah.
So is that the current state? That is that they are welcoming?
Their current state is that they do not discriminate in their hiring practices. They believe that homosexuality is a sin, so it is a problem for membership in the church, and being an employee
does not mean a member
are different things. They don't necessarily overlap. They do provide spouse and domestic partner benefits to the same-sex partners of employees, and they publicly condemn homophobia.
It's amazing what happens to your principles, and I say principles in quotations, which only you two can mm-hmm. see, obviously, what happens to those when your money is threatened.
Yeah.
And you see that in lots of churches.
Everything.
Like that's
every day.
Or the Mormon church is a good example. They get drugged behind progress, kicking and screaming mm-hmm. because their tax exempt status gets threatened. So they eventually get on board with yep. whatever social change is happening. And like, this is the same issue. This is like one small step. They're like, okay, so we want to keep that money from the government, so we'll hire you. But the next step is going to be like, we want to keep that money from the government, so we're going to say that that was old policy, and now we've,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've changed policy on membership for yeah. our gay members. And then they'll change their policy for transgender members. And that's great, but I wish it didn't take the threat of funding for that mm-hmm. to happen. I wish that organizations like this could just like be introspective and look at the world and how it's changing and realize that that's the yeah. right thing to do. I wish it's frustrating.
Yeah.
That it's such a, it is. That it has to be the money to make people do the right thing.
Uh-huh. Their disaster relief operations, their stores, all of that, it's charity and government funding, and not charity from members. They target the poor for their membership, and then they raise money from the rich. That's what the bell ringing is all about, is to raise money. They recently got over a billion dollars in someone's will.
Wow.
Not a member.
I'd be curious to see how much research that person put into the Salvation Army. I'm not saying one or the other.
Or
I'm just curious,
like,
if they really looked into it and they were like, I believe in this organization, or if they were like, oh, the Salvation Army does good mm-hmm. stuff, right? Because you hear about them all the time. And
you know, the average Christian hears about the Salvation Army and thinks Christians coming together to do good things, not weird Christian denomination doing good things.
Yeah. That they have their own set of beliefs, that they have their uh-huh. own hierarchy.
Their own church services, their own everything. Almost nobody knows that.
My mom was talking about, she remembered when the Salvation Army would be in the parades as a military band. That was really popular where she was growing up in Iowa. And my dad was surprised, like, military band? She's like, yeah, Salvation Army, the church that is based off the military.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad had no idea. He just thought it was a thrift store chain.
Yeah.
That it was some, you know, some mamby-pamby thing about, you know, helping the poor. But they never brought up Jesus or anything.
And a lot of people think they're just a disaster relief organization. No, it's hard to figure out. It almost seems like they have a case of dissociative identity where they can't figure out if they're the AA, the Red Cross, or a church. And they keep trying to do them all at the same time. Now, if you don't know what to think about the Salvation Army, you're not alone. evangelicals are in the same boat. They like the Salvation Army for lots of reasons, but they hate them compromising on their condemnation of gays.
Well, I am happy to hear that they have condemnation. No, that
they've compromised.
That they compromised, yes.
But it's one of those where, and this is part of why I'm having a hard time coming down hard on them, is they're getting flack from both the left and the right for their stance on gay people.
Right? You just can't win. I guess you could say they're damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Yeah.
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 But if they don't do or don't, then they're damned by both sides. Like, pick a side. Pick a side already, you know?
And
like,
just go full blown.
They're already condemned by both sides. Pick one and let only one side
be the
have a problem
with
you. Be
the socially progressive side.
Mm-hmm. All right. It is time for a break. Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by listeners just like you. You can find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/atheistnomads. That's patreon.com/atheistnomads. So, Lauren.
Yes.
You've been working a hustle.
I have my side hustle. Okay, so side hustles are little menial jobs that you do to supplement your income, and as a stay-at-home mom, the guilt is strong with this one. So I found a way to make some money on the side. It is the WAG app, W-A-G, WAG as in tail wag, because it is a dog walking app. It is like Uber for dog walking. If you're going to be late getting home and you need your dog out by a certain time, you can send out a little ASAP and it will find the closest dog walker, notify them, ask them if they want the job. If they say yes, they head right over and take care. You can also schedule ahead of time. You can choose from 20-minute, 30-minute, hour-long walks. Yeah, and that's what I'm doing.
All right.
It's where I'm raising up enough money to pay for possibly doing it through another company as well, but I'm just going to stick with WAG for now.
So, and you've got a referral link.
Yeah, okay, so if you're interested in getting a dog walk, if you use a promo code, the first walk is free, and then if you stick with it, the next walk, I get $50 if you use the code. So that's just another way to help with the podcast there by giving us money. Let's see here. The code is my name, LAUREN 26048. And that'll get you $25 off your first walk. Your first half hour walk is basically paid for. And then I get $50 every time the promo code is used after that. So I appreciate it.
Cool. All right. Let's get into the news.
Bark, bark.
And we are going to be sharing more links and referral links, from ways that we're saving money. So if you're wanting to save money, we have them for you.
I know. We need to convince these people to pay us as advertisers now. Like, screw the referral link. Just pay us and we'll...
Of them, I've applied for the affiliate program.
Yay!
But we'll get there later. The U.S. Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision, decided that at least sometimes it's okay to discriminate against gay people. They didn't specify when. Just sometimes. So what they did was they sided with the owner of Masterpiece Cakes in Colorado, who refused to bake a cake for a gay couple's wedding reception in 2012. Justice Kennedy, who is the one who penned the majority opinion that made same-sex marriage the law of the land, tried his best to avoid setting precedent and tried to keep this as narrow as possible. But the court decided that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission had been hostile towards religion in its handling of the case, and that there needs to be some way to protect the religious liberty of artists while still protecting gay people from discrimination.
Yeah, there must be a way. They just haven't figured it out yet, apparently.
Yeah. You have to decide which is more important. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only way you can do that.
Right, so the Supreme Court...
So who is more important? Either you allow discrimination or you don't. But you can't say sometimes on, you know, for both groups, because then you decide who...
The Supreme Court's job isn't to not set precedent. I mean, that's... They're not there to do a case-by-case basis.
They keep trying to, and...
Boo.
Those cases, even though they try to not set precedent, do set precedent.
Yeah.
Because every lower court has to look to the Supreme Court to inform their later decisions.
So I wouldn't be surprised if the cake maker in Kentucky or wherever that was, you know, starts up again.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just, ugh.
Now, one of the things I find interesting here is he made it clear that businesses should not be discriminating against gay people.
Wink, wink. That's all I hear. It's but like, that, you shouldn't, wink.
But that,
discriminate, wink, wink.
The religious liberty of artists needs to be protected. And I think what's at tension here is where the line between a business and art lies. There's, you know, if you're mass producing cakes for Albertsons or Walmart, and it's just a bunch of mass produced sheet cakes, nobody's going to call that art. That's a business. You can't discriminate. If somebody asks you to put some words on it, you put some words on it. Especially, and the key thing here is from a protected class. If somebody asks you to make, you know, commission a painting, and if you go to a conservative Christian painter and ask that person to paint a picture of you know, about gay love, I think that person would be justified in saying no. Wedding cakes are a product that involves artistic expression. It's not art for the sake of art. It's art that's supposed to be eaten.
The best kind of art, in my opinion.
It's the gray area in between the two.
I don't think it's that gray. I just flat out think that that this was a wrong decision.
Like, isn't that same? Like, you could also compare it to, like, family photos. Like, if it's family photo with gay parents versus an artistic photographer, like you're saying, like, painting versus mass sheet cakes.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I'm like, just take the photo. Just bake the cake. Like,
don't make a big deal out of it.
It's, but if I was on the other side of that,
I would totally want to make a big deal out of it. So I guess it, you know, it just depends on what side you're on.
But I can't imagine not, like, making a Christian family a wedding cake either.
Well, the question is, would they have ruled the same way if an atheist cake maker refused to make a Christian wedding cake?
Say for a wedding that was going to be at a Catholic church because of your objection to pedophile priests, and you don't want to make a cake that's going to be officiated by a child fucker.
Okay. Yeah. So you put it that way, then it's like, well, all right. But that's not what they were doing this as.
I think either you say you can discriminate against people for whatever reason you want, or you say you can't discriminate for any reason at all. It's too hard to have the gray area for that. You know, like,
yeah,
you can't, like, either we can discriminate against, like, either a atheist cake maker can discriminate against Christians, and a Christian cake maker can discriminate against people of the LGBTQ community, excuse me, or, like, nobody can discriminate. You know what I mean?
It should not be a case by case basis.
It should not be a case, but either we all can or we all can't. That should be the law. Because
I just really
how do you
hope,
decide whose beliefs are more important or worth more?
Well, I really hope that somebody's baptism cake gets denied by an atheist baker somewhere, and this goes to the Supreme Court, because this is just bullshit.
Because ultimately, I do think that when you open up a business, your personal rights are gone. If you have a business that is open to the public, you are sacrificing your rights. That is inherent in doing that, because you are making yourself a public entity, and at that point, you cannot discriminate against a protected class.
Yeah, it's not like you're... And that's the key word there, is the protected part. Mm-hmm. You can't discriminate just against anybody. It's these people who the government has determined are a vulnerable group who have had a history of being discriminated against. You're not allowed to discriminate against those people.
Right. There is nothing that says that a cake maker has to make cakes for Nazis. Nazis are not a protected class in the United States.
Yeah, so stop using that as an equal argument, people.
That's the argument people are different. Using is...
It's one that has been, yeah.
Yeah, that's one's popped up quite a bit.
Crazy. Two people who... So that's such a stupid argument. Two people who want to get married and love each other versus a group that wants to eliminate most of the population of the world because they look and believe differently than you.
Now, where I think I would kind of draw the line is if you have a cake shop and the public can walk in and place an order for a cake, you can't discriminate. If you want to be a bigot and make wedding cakes, then you shouldn't have a public shop. You're not going to have any trouble finding business because conservative Christians are going to refer you to their friends to bake cakes out of your kitchen. And I think that's really where it needs to, where I think the line should be drawn.
Yeah, that's the closest I can figure out.
Ah, it's annoying. It keeps coming up. We will keep talking about it.
Yes, as it keeps coming up.
The firefighter prophet, Mark Taylor, is someone who Liberty University is making a movie about. And he went on Sheila Zielinski's podcast to talk about what God's been showing about the election. Before we play the audio, Lauren, could you tell us a little bit about Sheila?
She is the host of The Weekend Vigilante, which is a podcast that has been hailed as Alex Jones in a skirt. She rages about the emergence of the New World Order, totalitarianism, I did not say that correctly, tyranny, the steady erosion of freedoms, liberties, and sovereignty, which, you know, that sounds okay, as well as the extirpation of Christian values. She wages war against establishment, corruption, corporate fascism, eugenics, martial law. Okay, all sounds good. The encroaching draconian police state, as well as the unseen hand of evil orchestrating world events.
I'm sorry, I would really love to hear her opinions on eugenics. Like, what is she curious about what that woman has to say about eugenics?
This very white, like, blonde
she's
person.
She's super worried that...
So worried.
What? I mean, typically, you think about eugenics, you don't
Well,
think...
usually when we think about eugenics, we're thinking it's bad. Maybe she just... maybe she's the other way.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. That makes more sense. If she had a negative opinion on eugenics.
She's one of those people that thinks that more white women need to have more babies so that we don't get all brown.
As soon as you said it, I was like, so what is she thinking? Like, people are trying to breed out white people? I don't know. But maybe that is it. Maybe she's like, maybe eugenics needs to be a thing.
No, she is a hardcore right-wing Christian crazy person.
I don't want to hear opinions on eugenics anymore.
Morbid fascination, I guess. But yeah, so what did she say? Or the person say on her show?
Okay, so, and then she may or may not have been talked about in Waiting for Wrath recently. But yeah, so Mark Taylor had the following to say.
One of the things that the Lord has been showing me is that this could be a very nasty hurricane season. We're already getting effects down here in Florida. Doesn't normally start this early. And that's what the Lord was showing me. It could possibly get, if they don't get control of the technology right now, which we both know there's technology out there. Irma and Harvey were both generated and steered by man. Both these hurricanes were. There could be a couple of nasty hurricanes right before the election to upset the election so people can't vote. They don't have power, so forth and so on.
I like how she started to interrupt and then just let him keep going. It's like, wow, sir. No, we cannot control the weather.
She's insane, but this guy goes further. So let's recap some details in case you missed them. God is showing him these things.
Of course, he's a prophet.
The bad people have devices that create hurricanes and can control hurricanes.
And we know this for sure.
And are going to be creating hurricanes to suppress voter turnout in the South.
I don't think that Christian people who like kind of buy into this realize how crazy this sounds to the rest of us until you reframe it. Like, what if we said, like, if it was a Muslim person saying this, like, about Allah, being like, this is what I believe is happening in the United States, Christian people would be like, well, you're a crazy person. So how does that change when it's your, like, your God? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you could apply it, like, take any number of beliefs and have somebody saying this thing on a radio show.
And that's how
he's saying, that's how crazy that sounds to us when we hear this. When you hear somebody saying it from a completely different religion from your own, that's how we feel about what he's saying, but like all the religions.
And
like,
to the average person, all you have to do is hear somebody on a radio station say, these people have this technology and we know they do. You assume that person must also have some kind of proof that they are withholding for the sake of brevity. There's no proof that there's people controlling the weather.
God showed him, which means he imagined it.
Literally imagined it. Or he spent some very long nights really carefully writing this down and then scripting it out. So it's,
this is insane because...
And damaging.
Yeah.
Damaging because if even a small fraction of people believe that somebody out there is trying to suppress the vote on their side,
mm-hmm.
it's... I mean, and also there's just... the statistics out there, it's much more likely that the right's going to suppress votes through gerrymandering and things like that than the left. The left does it too. Both sides do it. But obviously this guy is going to be right-leaning and it's just damaging. Like you can't...
What happens
you're,
when
you're creating
lose?
An enemy that isn't there.
Yeah.
And you're making people feel attacked when there's no attack on them.
And if you can't trust your vote...
And it's divisive.
Then what can you believe in? We're already so shaken by the fact that the last election was, what's the word for it?
Meddled with.
So, I mean, that should seriously disturb every single person out there.
Now, if you look at where he's coming from, scientists keep talking about how hurricanes are getting worse because of climate change. Well, obviously climate change isn't real. So they know something that they're hiding. And scientists also tend to be left-leaning, along with the science, which also tends to lean left. So that must all be not be true. And they're really just secretly trying to control the weather. And hurricanes keep hitting the South for some reason. And that's one of the most solidly Republican areas. So it must be scientists trying to keep good Southern Christians from voting.
That is actually so much more believable than people who think that God is punishing America for allowing gays to marry. Because if that were true, then God's punishing the wrong group of people.
Yeah.
At least this is somewhat believable.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Florida, what the hell?
Stop spreading nonsense. People need to stop spreading nonsense. Because there's no way that guy really believes that, right?
Oh, like, no, that he guy, could totally believe
yeah,
that.
I mean, it has to partially be to rile people up, to like get people on his side. There's no way that you can like get that far in life believing that scientists have...
One of the first things that Trump did when his administration took over NASA's budget was to get rid of the budget for the earth sciences. So all the weather observation that NASA was doing was basically like taken away. That left people wondering, why was there so much money being put into us observing our own planet when NASA is meant to be looking outwards? And a lot of people jumped to the conclusion was that all that money was going towards weather manipulation, which is a really popular conspiracy theory.
And this
didn't
guy,
take much to convince people.
Part of what I edited out from the already edited down clip of this guy rambling about this insanity hurricane last year, the eye went over his house and he watched as the hurricane kept getting driven out away from the land and then getting pushed back into land. People were praying and God was pushing it away.
Oh my God.
And then the scientists were using their their control devices to push it back in.
I wish we had control devices. This sounds like some like Dr. Evil shit right here. This is...
If the scientists of Earth are even remotely as powerful or even close to as powerful as your God, you might want to root for the other team. Like, you have an omniscient being that you think created the world and controls everything, and a scientist's weather machine stood up to that person at all. Like, give us another few years and we're going to have surpassed your God if that's really what you think, right? Like, it's nonsense. It's such nonsense.
It's Lex Luthor versus Superman. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Lex Luthor's going to win.
Yeah. Give him some time.
Oh, man. Because
Superman's peaked, right?
Yeah. All right. Mormon Leaks has released information connecting the LDS Church to at least $32 billion in stocks.
The Mormon Leaks stories are my favorite stories.
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons, as an ex-Mormon, I'm like, first off, I did so much free work for you. And I want compensation. I would also like the 10% of my income back that I paid. Not real, I mean, off and on for a lot of years, but I paid it. I would like that back. But also, the thing that kills me about this is they brag about their lay clergy. They're like, oh, it's all, you know, volunteer until you get to a certain level when you're committing your life to it, and then we pay you a small fee. It's like, if you have that much money, why don't you pay all of them? Uh-huh. Why don't you just pay them to do that work? You should. It's not because the church is contributing so much money to charities and to, you know, building, not even building churches and temples. They're building wealth. They're building wealth.
That's all they're doing.
That's all they're doing. Like, pay that bishop who makes $40,000 a year and supports his six kids off of it. Pay that guy a few bucks to spend. I mean, when my dad was bishop, he spent...
send kids off to different countries to do mission work for you, pay for it.
Pay for it. And that's what they say. They said, well, pay for it. Oh, it's for them. It makes them better people to pay for it. But no.
But your average bishop is working 40, 45 hours a week at work.
Mm-hmm. And then the same.
And then 50 to 80 for the church.
Yeah, I remember my dad saying that when he was a bishop, that he worked as many hours as a bishop during the week as he did with a job. And he had six kids. He owned his own business, had six kids, was a bishop for years and years. Like, he should have gotten some money for that. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Normal,
like,
churches pay their pastors, the equivalent, well, which bishops are equivalent to, pay them salaries.
Doesn't have to be huge, but pay them something.
At least a living wage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not even counting how many freaking kids they have.
Right.
Just a living wage. What is funny about this to me is that somebody from the outside is, well, duh. Have you not noticed that the temples are like crazy grandiose? Have you not noticed that they have these huge industries based around their mission work and charity and all this stuff? I'm just like, if you calculate how much people donate to the church and look at what the church spends it on, I'm not surprised at all that they've been doing stock market stuff.
Yeah, and you
it's
think
always
also,
been about money.
The population of the church, and then 10% of the income of those people, which not everybody pays 10% consistently. But even if half of the active members of the church consistently pay 10% of their tithing, that does not, or 10% of their income to tithing, that is not represented in the number of churches they build and the humanitarian work they do. That money is going somewhere else. And obviously, now we know it's going into building more wealth for the church.
Yeah. Okay, so these LLCs that are holding all this money, names like Ashmore Wealth Management, which is worth about $2 billion. There's Argyle Research LLC, worth about half a billion. There's Elkforth Partners at $3.5 billion. Glen Harbor Capital Management, $4.5 billion. They tried to track down the officers of these LLCs because they got all this information from the Securities and Exchange Commission is where they got all this information, because investment managers who deal with more than $100 million have to file with them. And they tried to talk to these officers. Most of them said, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Of course. I think that there would be a professional hit job in store for them if they dared said anything.
Either they're lying.
Or they really don't know.
Yeah.
To them, anything with the word asset management or capital management, your brain turns off. You're like, I don't know anything about finances, so I'm not going to even question what this is. People who do know what those are say, okay, who are they covering for?
But that, it makes sense that the Mormon Church wouldn't put any bishops or stake presidents or any of the quorum of the 12 as officers on this, because that's easy to trace.
Paper trail.
So average members. Who's to say they're going to actually ask those members if they want to be listed as officers?
Yeah, well.
If you want to keep it secret, you keep it secret. It's not that hard. These appear to be fake shell companies created by the Mormon Church to hide billions of dollars. Interestingly, on Reddit, somebody had found over $1 billion in pharmaceutical company stock.
This is one I was going to...
The Utah has a referendum on medical marijuana this year, which the Mormon Church is strongly against.
Of course. I read the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't get to be tax exempt, invest in the public market, and then turn around and try and lobby your government to sway that market one way or the other. How is that?
Because you know, medical marijuana is direct conflict with opioids and pharmaceuticals.
And if you want to invest and you want to make money in the stock market, like, as an organization, good for you, but you need to pay your taxes if you're going to do it.
Yep. Yeah.
You don't get to not pay your taxes and then try and sway.
And then you can't turn around policy. And try to bamboozle your members by saying, right. We are not a financial institution. We have nothing going on here.
Transparency would be the ethical thing to do, but the fact that they can try and sway policy while making money, making, like, building wealth, should be absolutely illegal. It is unethical also, but it should be illegal.
Everybody who's paid money to the Mormon Church should seriously reconsider being a member, because it's just one of those, that's what your money's going to, is just amassing wealth and keeping it away from people who could use it.
And can you imagine, like I said, like, these people who make, they don't make great money, they have six kids because the church has been telling them to
everything.
Have as many kids as they want, and then they're sacrificing all this time for these callings, and then to find out that the church has billions of dollars
sitting
like they can't afford to get their kid new shoes because they pay tithing and they do all this stuff, and then the church has billions of dollars sitting back there they could have been giving back to the members in financial help, in humanitarian aid, in all of that, and they just doing what with it? It's just sitting there too, is the crazy thing. It's just sitting there.
I wonder if they're just doing the same, if they're doing the pantry with it, if they're just storing it for some unknown future event, that so that they can liquidate and, you know, start up a mecca in the middle of the desert.
But why not be transparent if that's the case? Why not be like, the reason that we're asking you to volunteer is because we know the end is nigh and we're just saving up for it.
Don't know
you
why
know
they
what
wouldn't
I mean?
Do that.
Why wouldn't you
I
just
think
be
because
transparent?
Because more people wouldn't, they wouldn't give them money if they did that.
Well, I mean, the Mormons give that church a lot, I think.
And not a, and very few Mormons are going to see this. Nope.
Yeah, and if they do, they're going to, I mean,
I would seriously reevaluate.
Them, they won't, though. I mean, I remember being in that and, like, being presented with information like this and just being like, well, you don't understand, you know.
Well,
and that's
I'm proud that's, of them for being so financially
exactly yeah exactly. But I hope that this leads to somebody looking into their tax exempt status and reevaluating it, because if they are that, I mean, that looks an awful lot to me like a for-profit organization.
Oh, it looks worse than that.
It does, but I mean, it clearly is a for-profit organization, would be a better way to say it. So somebody should reevaluate their tax exempt status, and
it looks like a money laundering scheme,
and maybe that'll force the church to start giving some money back, because they aren't going to want to give up that tax exempt status. So hopefully they'll do a little bit more for the people who have been funding them.
No, it sounds to me like there's some people at the top who yeah, it's a money laundering scheme.
Mm-hmm. All right,
that's what it looks like from the outside.
Okay,
it's all
so
shady.
That's all
shady.
Really shitty. Okay, it is time for our last break and then a fun little discussion. We love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, tweet us @atheistnomads, send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or better yet, call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666. We might even play it on the show. You can also help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast directory of choice. In the last week and a half, we have saved $450 a month.
Yay!
This means we'll be able to continue buying diapers. Yay!
Yay! Yes, I know Rocco. And dog treats.
So, one way we did that, the biggest, was restructuring my student loans. After getting my undergrad in theology and a year in the seminary, I had $50,000 in student loans, $30,000 of which was in private loans. And the payments, after some forbearances when I was unemployed a few years back, ended up being over $600 a month.
Yeah.
And then add in Lauren's $50 a month in student loans. Pretty rough. And, it was difficult, and, we had reached the point where that was impossible. So doing fresh consolidation on the federal loans, saved about 150, and I refinanced the private loans through a group called Earnest. From the research I did, they seem to be pretty consistently the second highest rated. The first highest rejected me for not making enough money. Well, not making enough money for my credit level. Not surprised. Earnest did a little bit more thorough credit check, and they approved me. I have a link in the show notes if you're in the same situation where you've got brutal private loans and you need to cut down your payment. Earnest lets you pick how much you want to pay. Yes, if you pay less, you will pay longer. But you
and
can
thus pay more in interest.
Yeah, you'll pay more in the long run, but you can pick what you can afford, and they even allow you to change that later on, which is really nice. And once a month, once a year, you can skip a payment, no penalty. But I've got a link in the show notes that if you follow that, we'll each get $200. So if you're in the same situation, check it out. And we cut our phone bill in half, more than half, by switching to Ting.
Yeah, we finally had to ditch Verizon. It was just, I was hanging on to it because it's all I've ever had for like, God, 15 years or something ridiculous. That's, I've always used Verizon, but yeah, they've been doing some not so nice stuff. So it was time to move on. And Dustin found this other company to try out. Uh-huh. So that's what we're trying.
Verizon killed net neutrality. That was them. Yeah, AT&T and Comcast and everybody else helped, but Verizon, it was really Verizon.
And who do you guys say, who do you use now?
Ting.
You say Ting?
So not Ting is a...
T-I-N-G.
They are a virtual carrier. They support both GSM and CDMA. If you're on CDMA, they use Sprint towers. If you're on GSM, they use T-Mobile towers. You can bring your own device from almost any network. We brought phones over from Verizon, and they work on the T-Mobile network. And you pay for what you use. So it's $6 a line, and then you get put it into a bucket based on your actual usage. So if you don't do any texting, you pay zero for texting. If you're on Wi-Fi most of the time, you're not going to pay much for data. But then if you have a month where you're on the road and you're doing a lot of texting and you're doing a lot of phone calls and you're doing a lot of mobile data, then you're going to pay more. But the rest of the year, you don't. It's a different way of doing it. It's kind of nice.
Yeah. And you'll probably hear more about it in the future.
Yeah. I'm trying to get into their affiliate program. But until then, I've got a link that you can follow. You'll save $25 if you switch either towards your first bill or purchasing a device. Not a bad deal. So if you hate your carrier for being evil, check out Ting. All right. Now for our discussion. I'm a dad. So I know that as long as I don't abuse my child in society's mind, and I stick around, if I do those two things in society's mind, I'll be above average at least average.
There are so many studies out there talking about the effects of a father who remains in the family and what effects that has on the children.
Uh-huh.
Because that's not a given.
Yeah.
It's like, why are these studies even being done? Oh, right. Because abandonment is an issue.
Yeah.
So the amount of pressure from society on me is basically zero. I've seen a bit of society's pressure on moms, and that's totally different.
Whole another ball game.
Yeah. Wow. And two big areas where I definitely see it is with both religion and woo. I want to start with religion. Lauren, have you felt any religiously motivated pressure from family?
Luckily, most of my family is very understanding of and or is atheist, so no.
And for my family?
The question of whether or not your parents would take our child to church has come up, and I think they basically said that they probably wouldn't.
That did come up?
Maybe that was while you were rafting and I was just hanging out with your parents.
Oh,
I don't know.
Okay.
But there was a, I guess if there was a scale of 1 to 10 on pressure, there's a 1 there.
Okay.
Just because it is a possibility, while in my family, it's not.
Okay. But of course,
I'm lucky. Very lucky.
With my parents, if we say don't,
they wouldn't do it.
They won't do it.
Absolutely.
Mary, how about your family?
The pressure is very subtle, but it's definitely there. Like, it's less explicit than I thought it was going to be. I thought as soon as I had a baby, it would be like, can we take her to church? Can we this and can we that? And they haven't been, but I also do get very long texts about things going on in their lives and how, you know, great it is. Like, they had recently had somebody in their life whose daughter died, and they sent out, my mom sent me this big long text about how great it was that this family had faith and how it like got them through. But she actually sent it to all my siblings, but it was like, it felt like it was for me.
Yeah.
I mean, but it doesn't, I actually get a little bit more pressure from my family, and it's not religious, but it's religious based, and as to what my role is as a mom. Yeah. And they don't, like, it's never explicitly like God says as a woman you're supposed to blah blah blah, but culturally it's so much a part of my family that
so much
the
a part
mom
of the
stays
Mormon
home
faith.
Yeah, and the dad goes to work, where Robert and I have the opposite arrangement. I go to work, he stays home. That things will come up sometimes about, like, my dad saying, well, you know, it's different when you're a working mom, you can't do as much because you know that baby is your first priority. And I want to be like, the baby's everyone's first priority. Like, Dustin, the baby's your first priority, but that doesn't change, like, that I'm a working person who, you know, prioritizes my job. Like,
well,
it doesn't matter which parent you are.
Keeping the child alive is making the money to keep the child alive.
Mm-hmm. But any parent, if something happened, would drop what they were doing at work to go take care of the baby. I was like, yeah, of course. Like, I can't disagree that the baby's my number one priority, but that's just parenting. It's not because I'm a woman who should be home and can't be. But I do think when she gets older, I know that the pressure, like, to take her to church and stuff will increase. I think my parents think, actually, I know they think that now that I've had a baby, it's a matter of time until I go back to church, because they've said that to me before I got pregnant and stuff, that they're like, once you have kids, you'll go back.
Well, see,
so I think they're like, oh, you know, any day now she's going to
dig your feet into the dirt there. And, and absolutely, like, in spite of them, never, ever.
I was like, I guess you don't know how I work at all. Like, after 30 years, you don't understand that this is just going to make me less likely.
Well, I don't know what you saw in the Mormon church, but I know in the Adventist church, kids usually left in their teens and 20s, early 20s.
Yeah.
And then came back in their 30s with toddlers.
There's something about the terrible twos that drives you back to religion.
that's how that seemed to work through the 80s and 90s. It stopped.
Yeah.
Enough that my parents' church doesn't have children's divisions anymore. There's no kids.
With Mormons, I think that a huge reason that they push you to have children so young and get married so young, which I also think is connected to the whole don't masturbate thing. So, like, if we tell them not to masturbate, then they'll get married super young.
Oh, yeah.
Then they'll start having kids super young. And once you're married and you have kids, you're going to feel, like, too tied to leave. Because with Mormons, I don't know anyone who left in their teens and 20s and ever went back. I mean, I don't know a single person. Mm-hmm. I do know some people who eventually left in their 30s, even with kids. But most of my friends who got married and had kids in their late teens and early 20s are still in it. They're still super in it. And it's smart on their part, you know?
Yeah, make
the
sure that the
sexual gratification
is...
you can have is with your spouse in marriage. Also, we don't say you can't use birth control, but we highly encourage you to have as many children as you can have. And it's really hard once you've got all these people depending on you and that community supporting you to leave it. So,
right. Yeah. You can't leave when, you know, every babysitter you have is in the church.
And also the person most important in your life, your spouse, in most cases, is holding you accountable is what it feels like.
Yeah.
Even if both of you kind of are like, I don't love doing this. You feel like you made an agreement to do it is what I think. I mean, that's, I haven't experienced that because I haven't married somebody in the church, but it would be hard to have those feelings of wanting to leave, feeling like you had this other person that it was still very important to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you wouldn't want to be the person to be like, hey, I'm having these doubts. That'd be a very difficult conversation to have. Leads to divorce. It destroys your eternal marriage. I say in quotations, like, it would be hard to be the spouse to bring up, hey, you know that how that whole we were going to be married for time and all of eternity thing, I kind of want to crush that with these feelings I've been having. I think if that's why they get you
Yeah.
They get you young.
All right.
For that reason. Kind of went off on a tangent there.
Really
but
I'm not really surprised that your family chooses a more passive way. It's like when somebody, if you walk by and they start to talk a little bit louder mm-hmm. about church service this week and what the subject was, and you're like, yeah, I know they're talking to me.
Exactly. And
I'm going to pretend I don't hear them.
It might be more passive, more implicit, but it doesn't change that I know exactly what it is and when it's happening. And I was a part of it long enough that I know how to do it and I know what it sounds like. Overall, it's been better than I thought. And my relationship with my family has been better since I had a baby. But we're going to see how that goes over the next few years.
And we will have to revisit this.
Yeah, as they get older, because I also like my parents have like kind of been in like hot water with my siblings for saying stuff to my nephews and nieces in the past.
Yeah,
you know,
that's about a very strong line that mm-hmm. parents have, that if in-laws or parents cross that, it's no bueno.
Right. And
I wonder if that's why my mom went to the Unitarians when we were growing up, was just to get some of her friends to shut up and say, yeah, we went to church on Sunday.
Yeah.
My brother thought about going to the UU for that reason.
It's so, I mean, it's just if people ask you what you did on Sunday and you said you slept in or just did gardening or something, there's this hanging like expectation there from a lot of people. So just get rid of it by just going to a church that doesn't care what you believe in.
All right. So how about the woo side of things?
I personally have not been pressured at all with any kind of woo that I can think of, but I see it everywhere I go. It is, if your baby doesn't get this particular vitamin, you are going to kill your baby. Or if you don't discipline your child in this particular manner, your child is going to grow up to be a sociopath and will murder people. It's this crazy, like, if you do this slightly superstitious thing, then that's going to prevent some horrible thing happening. And that's just not how life works. I see a lot of that, especially in like, that's why I've avoided Facebook mommy groups. How about you, Mary? Any?
I'd say the same. It's about the same. It's a lot. There's a lot out there. It's the thing. Like, everyone's got an opinion that they think is fact, but like, realistically, there's a huge range of how kids are get raised and grow up, and most of them turn out fine. So, but it does feel, I think I'm kind of with you. I think I've kind of avoided things like mommy groups and YouTube pages and Googling too hard.
Yeah.
And like I
the equivalent of WebMDing your symptoms.
Right. I talk to my husband about parenting, and I talk to my pediatrician or Clyde's pediatrician. And I really try and cut out all the noise outside of that, because it's just so much, you know, and everyone's going to have an opinion. Everyone's going to be critical.
Oh yeah. Not to mention the Instagram moms mm-hmm. who are constantly posting these perfectly posed pictures of their children behaving in nice clothes, turning their noses up at people who dare to shop at Walmart or Target for their children. I'm not talking about anyone in particular. Cough, cough. Feeding them organic foods versus non-organic foods. Even this puff stuff that I got at Winco today. This is just to, you know, introduce Kylie to some solid foods.
So this is Winco, not Whole Foods, right next to it. Can I read the label?
No, I want to read it. There's something in particular on this label that I want to read. Okay, so it's organics. Okay, that's the first one. Happy Baby. Superfood. That's the second one. Puffs. Veggie, fruit, and grain puffs. Okay. Kale and spinach, which is, I figured, was probably very nutritious sounding. 20 milligrams of choline to support brain and eye health. Okay, sounds slightly scientific. Gluten-free. Oh, who cares? USDA organic, and so on and so forth. I did look up what choline is. There is no such thing as choline deficiency in the EU. And I'm assuming in the US, because it is made by your body and to supplement liver, brain health, that kind of thing. And you do get it in the foods that you eat.
So then realistically, if your baby is either breast or bottle fed, there's probably not a problem there.
Yeah. Where on earth did they get this choline thing? What it is, it's a buzzword to freak you out saying, oh my gosh, there's something I haven't heard of that my baby needs to have. I better have this or else they're going to grow up with this stupid poo-poo brain. And
this is the only place I've seen it. So obviously it's the only place they can get it.
Yeah.
And then you buy a whole bunch of the...
No, I pulled it out and it's like, holy shit, this is a lot of bullshit corporate marketing bullshit. Yes, I know I used bullshit twice, but it's really
better
bullshit.
Better than me. I'm the one who's used the word poopy. But
veggies, fruit, and something else.
Yeah, you want to have good nutrition for your baby. If you're breastfeeding, good nutrition for yourself, your baby's going to take what they need. Mm-hmm. We don't have malnutrition in the U.S. like they do in places that have choline deficiency, whatever the hell choline actually is.
If you're breastfeeding and you take prenatal vitamins still, you only need to eat well for yourself.
Yeah.
Because your baby will get everything your baby needs, guaranteed.
If you're not breastfeeding, that's what formula is for.
And your baby gets everything your baby needs.
Yeah, they're not giving you freaking like water, you know, in formula. That stuff is nutrition, all the nutrition a baby needs. So this is, and this scare tactic happens all the time with medical and with nutritional information for moms, I've noticed, where it's like religion. They convince you that there is something that you are lacking in, and then they sell you the product to make sure that your baby doesn't end up with some kind of horrible deficiency.
I saw it. I want to say, I don't know if this is exactly it, but it was when we were in a call, we were trying to buy some extra diapers, and I think they were called harmless diapers. Does that sound right? Harmless diapers. And it was like, you know, that packaging that they do when they're trying to sell you on like a all like natural, this isn't going to irritate, but they were basically being like, anything else is gonna damage your baby. And I'm like, I am not buying those harmless diapers. You're just trying to scare moms into using your diapers by implying they're the only ones that aren't harmful.
Yeah. I asked you about swim diapers because our babies are coming of swim diaper age, and I asked her what she used, because online it's rather confusing. There are disposable diapers, which you probably shouldn't use, .. They don't really give you a reason why, unless you're environmentally conscious about it. Or there are reusable swim diapers, and then there's 15 different brands, and each one is slightly different. And I just finally asked Mary, you've been to the beach, what did you use? And she's like, use this one. I'm like, okay.
Because it was what was on the shelf, and it worked swimmingly.
Okay, diapers.
Good pun there.
Thank you. Pun intended.
Diapers is one I want to cover. Environmentally conscious. We live in the fucking desert.
Yeah. So
if you're laundering 20 diapers a day and you go through more diapers if they're cloth than disposable, because the cloth ones aren't as absorptive because they don't have as many layers of absorptiveness, you're laundering 20 diapers a day. That's a lot of water that's getting pumped out of the aquifer in the desert.
Not to mention the bleach and detergent you're putting back into
the treat.
Because you got to use a lot of bleach to make them clean enough to put back on your baby.
So,
yeah, I gave up on that after day one.
I think that Robert thought I was going to want to do disposable diapers. He was like, I'm sorry. He thought I wanted to use cloth diapers when I first got pregnant. So he brought it up a couple times and I was like, no, disposable diapers. Definitely. I'm like, do whatever you want to do as moms. Like, if you want to do reusable or cloth diapers, that's great. But not this girl. I didn't want to do that much laundry.
Well, we talked about it.
Yeah.
And I think the water consumption was kind of the deciding factor.
That and especially the first 6 months, a baby, they have a lot of waste. And
it's not solid.
Keeping up with cloth diapers would be... Without that stuff leaking and spilling over and getting onto everything is already quite the Olympic sport. But to throw in something as like cloth diapers, it's just like, I chose not to.
Yeah. We did. When I was in Ecuador, when I was 19, I worked in an orphanage for like 6 months, and they did cloth diapers, and I can tell you, they were not effective. It was like when we'd wake them up in the morning, it was just a mess. Every kid, every time, just not effective.
Yeah. Wow. You were in Ecuador for 6 months at an orphanage. Jeez.
So I've changed hundreds, if not thousands, of cloth diapers in my day. So that's why when I got pregnant, I was like, oh, no. I will be using disposable diapers. Thank you.
Yeah. And we have to keep our eyes on for the sensitive and perfume free, that kind of stuff, because as a baby, I was super sensitive to it. So
as an adult, you're sensitive
as
to
an
it.
Adult, I can't use regular Tide. I break out. I have to use, you know, Tide sensitive or ivory free or something. But
it's been easy for us on detergents and soaps because we use Dove soap and
we already use the gentlest stuff for me. So our baby is not exposed to the rougher chemicals and stuff.
Well, and all those chemicals are just perfumes. You don't need to perfume your baby because it's a freaking baby.
They smell amazing.
At the beginning of this podcast, I may have mentioned that.
Yeah, okay.
So there was a smell over here and it was the baby.
Okay. We are going way over on time.
Okay. Well,
Point. Yes. It means lots of patron content. One last topic I want to.
Sorry, I'm going to try one of the superfoods.
I want to talk to both of you about, since you both breastfeed. I've started listening to Sawbones recently. Awesome podcast. I highly recommend it. And the McElroys are the ones that do the show, and Sydney is a doctor. So she is awesome and is the reason why the show is good. Her husband is kind of the dead weight. Justin's dead.
You said it.
He's the dead weight. He makes it slightly more interesting. Otherwise, it'd just be a lecture.
Hopefully not listening.
He knows he's dead weight on that show. It's My Brother and Brother and Me is his main one. But anyway.
Tastes like a crappy Cheerio.
She's on her. They have their second child now, who is about 3 months old now. And she did an episode recently on breastfeeding and talked about how the way she described it did not sound like anything I've ever seen in the Northwest. That it's kind of, they're in the South, where it has a stigma of if you breastfeed, you're poor, bottle feeding is best. No one in her family had ever breastfed a kid. They were all bottle babies. Her husband's family, they were all bottle babies because only poor people would breastfeed.
That's, I feel like, the opposite of what I get in the Northwest.
Totally blew me away.
And I feel like in the Northwest, you breastfeed if you're more affluent because that means that one of you doesn't have to work for the most part. I mean, I do work, so I have to pump and we supplement with formula and stuff. But usually that means that somebody gets to not, the mom gets to stay home and breastfeed. And also I feel like there's this sense that breastfeeding is better. And this is, I don't believe this, but I feel like there's a sense in the Northwest that breastfeeding is better. And if you are more educated, you know that. That's not what I believe. I think that's a sense amongst mothers that if you...
That's part of the mommy group.
That's part of the mommy group. And I actually was going to say this about, we were talking about those things that they try and, you know, they make you feel bad about as a mom. And I this woman who, like, mom was her thing. So she was always on top of stuff. And she, like, told me when I was pregnant, she was like, so when you start breastfeeding, you're going to have to cut everything out of your diet and then reenter everything very slowly so that the baby, you can figure out what things make the baby happy and healthy and what things don't. And she's like, whoa. This was a really common thing because
that's insane.
Right. Super insane. And she said she did this with her kids. Like she cut out everything except for like vegetables. And then she would slowly add in like eggs and see how the baby, and then she would slowly add in dairy and see how the baby did with that. And she would slowly add in nuts and see how the baby did with that. And that to me feels like a super, privileged,
upper class
thing to be able to do it. And that's, I feel like, how the Northwest approaches breastfeeding is that it's
exclusion diets are a very yuppie thing.
It's very yuppie. I feel like there's more stigma to bottle feeding in this area mm-hmm. than there is to breastfeeding. But also that, like, when I started breastfeeding, I was like, am I doing this wrong? And the fact that I did not change my diet, all I did was not drink and breastfeed. Like, that was like my...
Oh, that was one thing they talked
about
on Sawbones.
And there are studies out on that even make that like...
Well, not so much studies as just how human physiology works. Breast milk isn't going to have a higher alcohol content than your blood. It's going to be the same.
I did when I first started breastfeeding. If I had one glass of wine, I would pump twice because I didn't know. Uh-huh. And so then I started doing some research on it, and it basically was like your breast milk, like the alcohol content of your breast milk is going to match your blood or be slightly lower. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a buzz, you're good to go.
If you get up to a 0.08, your breast milk is less alcoholic than orange juice.
Yeah. We must have read the same article because that's what I read too.
No, I have heard that exclusion diet kind of mentality for allergies with children when they start eating solid foods at about, 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. Just be really careful. You just watch what you feed your kid and see their reactions to it. Maybe keep a journal. But when it comes to like the breastfeeding versus bottle feeding, all the mommy and me groups were like, breastfeed is best because it's cheap, because it's everything that the baby needs. Even to your detriment, the baby will be okay if you breastfeed. There are tons of there are support groups for it. And then with this little like asterisk, they're like, but if you do have to bottle feed, do not be ashamed. Mm-hmm. Not everybody can breastfeed. So here, this is how you do it. That way, and formulas are so well supplemented now that that's all complete nutrition.
Yeah. When formula was introduced, it was better than breast milk because the average American diet was not as good as it is now. Yeah. In the old days, people did not have nutritious diets compared to now because the availability of food was garbage back then because it's based on what was in season locally.
Thank goodness for that nutritious mac and cheese.
The amount of fortifying that goes on into foods now is ridiculous. But at that time, bottle feeding was better nutrition. Now, if you eat even garbage food and take prenatal vitamins, it's going to be the same nutrition as formula.
Yeah.
It just... The breast milk has immunoglobulins.
What was interesting when we were talking about this was, we wonder if it's a regional thing. I wonder if it's an economic thing. Because the rich Southern woman would have a wet nurse. That was a given thing less than 100 years ago. So it was, you wanted to get back to your pre-pregnancy body as fast as possible. And there is still a lot mm-hmm. of pressure to do that. All the mommy and me groups are so forgiving of that. They're like, did you get up today? Good job. You did great. But if you go online, it's like you're constantly inundated with pictures of celebrities who just had a baby last week and they're back down to 112 pounds and looking great. And that unrealistic expectation kind of just sways the way you think about.
Yeah.
Feeding your baby.
And I wonder if in the Northwest, we still have some of the pioneer spirit. Pioneers didn't have the option of a wet nurse.
Yeah.
You were barely struggling to get by, and everybody was struggling for a long, long time. So there weren't any other options. So that's just the way it was.
Yeah. Anybody from the Northwest or the Midwest for a large part of their family history were probably dirt poor.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I don't see it like that. I honestly think that it's a Northwest affluence thing. I think it's the same reason that you get why we've had in this, like the Northwest area, this might seem like a stretch, but such a huge or the number of people who are anti-vaccination has expanded.
Yep.
Outside of the religious group. We're talking about like the moms who have like done the research from home and stuff. I think that there's a certain level
more air quotes,
affluence.
By the way.
Yeah, more air quotes. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
that parenting, they're being a stay at home mom is their thing now. It's not a necessity anymore. It's not like one parent has to stay home. It's like, that's what they choose to do. It's their thing. They're going to be the best parent. They're going to get them into the best schools. They're going to make sure they get the best, what was it in your past?
Happy baby choline.
Choline. That's where I think the choline thing comes from. They're going to get the best choline. They're going to get the best breast milk by making sure that they don't eat eggs. And you know what I mean? I think it's a part of this sort of like new organic again in
absolutely
in air quotes lifestyle
and,
that we see in the Northwest with the
between me and my sister. My sister lives in Portland and is very Portland. When I was making the comment about looking down on people who shop at Target, that's who I was talking about. That's something she mentioned to my mom. And and you know, it takes them 2 hours to put the kids down to bed because they, you know, because the kids have a certain thing that they have to do. They have to be read for at least 45 minutes and all this stuff. And my mom looks at me and she's like, you're going to be able to feed your kid anything and she's going to be able to sleep in a shoebox. I'm like, yep. Different parenting styles. I would say that my sister is definitely more of the affluent Northwest.
Yeah.
And I'm not. But, you know, even she still breastfeeds. That's, I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think that breastfeeding is a part of that. Like that they could, see it as like it's the
healthier,
organic. Yeah.
Don't put chemicals in your baby.
Okay, exactly. I think it's that mentality.
Well, what the hell is choline? Choline's a chemical.
They're all chemicals. We're all made up of chemicals.
Okay. So here's a hypothesis on it. It's a combination of leftover pioneerism, the affluent neo hippie yuppie crunchy organic bullshit, and it's also what's supported by science. All three of those are definitely well present in the Northwest.
I totally agree with that. I think those three things like have Venn just
diagram.
Kind of like culminated together in the Northwest and just made it like
breastfeeding is it's cheap and accessible. It is natural. And it is scientifically proven to be the best if it is available. And that combination, it hits every group.
Yeah, it does. There's a little bit of something for everybody in that.
Now, if only the vaccination movement was as easy to address.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun.
It's been a lot of fun. Yay. Thanks for having me, guys.
We are out of time. And Mary, do you have any shows coming up?
I am at Long Drop Cider tomorrow at 8 p.m. And I am also coaching Boise's Funniest Person this year in the month of July, every weekend but the 4th. So I am on stage at least a couple times there.
No idea how tempted I am.
Do it. You guys should do it. That's what got me. That was my start. Boise's Funniest 2014.
Really?
I got second place.
Oh, my gosh.
And now I'm coaching. Now look at me.
Now look at me.
Yep. I'm coaching the local novice comedy competition.
I posted on Lady Business's page. She's like, I have one joke. Can I do it? And they're like, yeah. Okay.
That's all you need. So, just get started.
So you're there every Wednesday?
I have not been to Liquid in many
months.
Oh,
sorry.
Long Drop. I am doing this Wednesday. It's my second time doing it. Last time I was there, I headlined, but this time I'm just doing a little feature set, but it's actually a super fun room. It's downtown right up Capitol by where Real Foods used to be. I don't know the exact address.
Yes. Okay.
By the Gas Lantern. And I was really skeptical the first time we did it and it was packed and the cider is awesome and the comedy is really good. So I would highly recommend it.
Nice.
It is a free show.
All right. Well, that's all we have time for. Okay, we're at 2 hours. We're way out of time. Listeners, thank you so much for listening. Remember, not all those who wander are lost.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice, and while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.
I feel hate mail coming, but we're saying it's easy.